Welcome back to another episode of Obsessed with Death. Thank you so much for continuing to listen and support the podcast. Today's episode is with writer and director Ryan Neufer. Ryan wrote a short film called The Hereafter, starring Patrick Fabian, who you may know from Better Call Saul. The idea of the short film is based around a creation of what is called the selfie casket, and that's sort of all I'm going to say. I want you to listen to this episode and really get a better idea of the film and Ryan's plan for the film and what he was thinking while writing and filming this. But I also want you to go on YouTube right now and search The Hereafter and watch the film. It was a great episode. I had a ton of fun chatting with Ryan about the film and, of course, all other death-related things. And one of my favorite, you know, conversations I've had in a really long time. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. So please enjoy another episode of Obsessed with Death. Ryan, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Very excited to chat and hear more about your short film, The Hereafter.
Yeah, thank you. I am a big fan of, I've started listening to your podcast, so I'm a big fan of that, but I'm also a big fan of death since I was a young boy. So this is great. Thanks for having me.
Well, then you're the perfect guest for sure. That's sort of how I like to get things started. I'm curious what your relationship with death is like. Do you think about it a lot? Is it something you worry about? Does it sort of consume you at all? I mean, you obviously wrote this movie. Death is clearly on your mind on some level. I'm just curious what your relationship with death is like now.
Yeah, no, it is weirdly always been a fixation of mine. From a young age, my dad, he would talk about wanting to be cryogenically frozen. Yeah. So he had plans out loud to our entire family that he wanted his head frozen. And so I think that established this sort of negative stigma of like, oh, like death is something we should avoid and something we should hide and run away from. Hearing that at a young age just got me thinking about it. And I think there was also this, like, what I didn't realize was a panic attack when I was a young kid around like 6 or 7. And I remember I was rushed down to the hospital because I was saying I couldn't breathe. And I remember looking in my mom's eyes and being like, I'm going to die. And she, who this person is supposed to be this entity of like calm and resolution, she looked at me with like fear. And I think that stuck with me throughout my whole life where I'm like, oh my God, like everyone is afraid of this. This is something like, this is a cruel joke, it feels like. It's just always been some, like, one of my favorite themes to explore, because it's like, no matter how strong you are mentally, no matter how strong you are physically, it's this unavoidable commonality that we have that in some way through religion or philosophy, we're trying to grapple with or run away from. So yeah, it totally consumes me.
I would imagine to be that young and to have, you know, it, for, from your mom's perspective, right, to have a child that young look at them and say, like, I think I'm going to die. I mean, that's super intense.
Yeah, and it's something I've thought more now from the perspective of an adult. Like, I don't have kids yet, but I can start to sort of picture what that would be like. And to have this, like, you know, I'm pretty fresh. It's only 5 years in. And, like, to have a five-year-old convincingly look at you and say that would just be straight from a horror movie. So like, how can you try to remain calm and collected in the face of that? So my poor mother, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's nobody wants to take their child to the hospital for any reason, But yeah, it does have a horror vibe to it to have a small child say, I think I'm gonna die. And that's really such a kind of a terrifying age to realize that you're gonna die one day, right? Like, I don't think I legitimately realized I was gonna die until I was like 15 or something.
Oh wow, yeah. No, it caught on for a young age for me, and I remember like it kept me up at night when I was young, when after I think that incident, and I remember just sitting in my room and thinking like I have so much fun, like what a good day I had with my friends, you know. I really had like a great childhood, so it's odd that like it wasn't like I was constantly thinking about like dark ideas, but at the end of the day, I think it was always when I was alone at night, I was like, wait, all of this fun is just going to end and I'm never going to get it back again. Because I was in a pretty, you know, secular family. Like my parents were relatively staunch atheists. And so I didn't have like they instilled that me in that to me from a young age of like, there's nothing after this. So enjoy it while you have it. I'm like, wait, but that's not fair. Like I want they keep having fun with my friends. It's just always been a part of my work since.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I'm picturing you like riding your bicycle through the neighborhood, but still also with like a smile on your face, but also still like thinking like, oh, this is all just gonna end one day.
Well, that you're totally right. And
Yeah.
I had a pretty like picturesque childhood too, because I'm from the island of Maui in Hawaii.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And
I mean,
yeah, so like, you know, it's exactly what you think. It's these paradise images and me floating in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, but then in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you're like, oh my God, I'm gonna drown. I'm gonna something like
yeah.
I couldn't avoid it. As of late, like it doesn't scare me as much death, which kind of in its own way trips me out because it used to be something I was so consumed by. But these days, like I don't know, maybe I was just so like the anxiety was so intense for so long about death that now I'm just kind of exhausted and I'm like, you know what? Whatever happens, happens. And I'm having a bit of like, I don't know, I'm turning a corner, which like since it drives my creativity so much, I'm kind of like conflicted about because I want to have that fear of death anxiety because I think it does fuel me, but like it is softening, which is nice, but it's, you know, it's contradictory.
There's definitely some motivation behind the idea that you are going to die one day, right? Like that should motivate you a little bit to live your life and take chances and do things you maybe necessarily wouldn't do if you didn't have that idea in the back of your mind. But at the same time, yeah, it would be nice to be able to just sit at the beach and enjoy the sunset and not think about how many more of these you have left, you know?
Yeah, so it is tough, but I have always been someone who like does not want to stagnate, and like I the idea of me sitting on the beach just relaxing gives me anxiety in and of itself, because it's
Yeah.
like as an artist, like I constantly want to be making something new. I'm thinking like, does any of this work I'm creating mean anything? I need more viewers, you know, the common like anxieties of an
Sure.
artist. And so it's like I feel like I'm just chasing something, and I think it's me sort of running away from death in it of itself. And it's, I just want to create it sounds so melodramatic, but like a legacy to leave behind, because, you know, I think that's like why artists create in some ways, because it, in a way, immortalizes them. You know, they
Yeah.
have a body of work that lives on for, well, most of it, what is going to be until the universe essentially ends. So yeah, I think it does drive me creatively.
Yeah, I think about that too. And, you know, it's definitely a part of why this podcast exists. I mean, this is something that'll hopefully stick around for a while. I was actually talking to somebody the other day, and we were sort of having a very similar conversation and just like about the internet and things existing forever. And I'm starting to think that this whole idea of like, oh, well, it's on the internet, it's forever. I don't know if that's really necessarily true. I like I just even going back to thinking about, I'm not sure how old you are, Ryan, but I mean, I remember having, you know, a live journal, right? Like a MySpace. And you go and you think about that, and that's all gone. That doesn't exist anymore. So why wouldn't everything we're doing right now also just not exist in like 20 years? Does that worry you at all?
No, it's a great point, because as the internet evolves, it is where, and I think about this in relation to death and creativity and everything, just the oversaturation of content.
Yeah.
Is almost like there is an infinite amount of it, which is doing odd things to, I think, people's attention spans, their interests. Obviously, that's not a novel thought, but yeah, when I create this art, it's like art used to be something that was so, you know, sacred and something that, you know, you had to put so much time and effort into. And I think people used to value it more. And now it's just we're too oversaturated that, I mean, I'm trying to promote this new project I'm doing for a new film, and I've been having to create little teaser and promotion for it. And I get the sense more and more that it's just you're shouting into this big void, because everyone is so desensitized. They've seen every way you can make a piece of content. And it's like, how do you galvanize people out of that? And how do you shock them and bring something new? Because I like to explore ideas that are shocking and try to subvert common ideas, but it's feeling harder and harder to do. So I don't know what I just got to keep going, I guess, but there is a tedium to it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, what I sort of realized in the conversation that we were having about, you know, the similar topic was the content might not exist forever, but like the way you made somebody feel with what you create is sort of what will probably last the longest. And I try and think about that when I'm creating something or just talking to somebody, or, you know, when it all comes back to death, right? It's like you want to be remembered. And I think, I have no idea if this is the healthiest way to want to be remembered, but I look at it in a sense of, well, how did I make that person feel? Yeah. Again, also not like an original thought, but when it comes to creating things, and I like to think that I'm creating something for myself and for other people, and I do worry about just being erased from the world. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's only going to be so much time that's going to pass before anybody who even knew I existed is even around anymore. There is sort of a time limit on things, even with the internet. Like, I don't think anything is forever.
No.
And I try and use that as a like a calming mechanism a little bit, because you're like, look, you could do your things, and while you're here, you could enjoy whatever comes from it. But at some point, you just got to realize, like, this is all just going to be for nothing at some point.
Yeah.
And try and embrace that as well in some capacity.
And you make me think, like, it is all about just trying to get someone to elicit an emotional response to them. And I think in our oversaturated age, it's like we now, the metrics of art is quantified in likes and comments and boosting yourself in the algorithm. And I'm starting to forget that art is about giving someone an emotional response. I remember when I first moved to LA, and I had, because I work in film, obviously, and I had someone at a big agency read one of my scripts. I was so excited to meet with them about my script, because I was like, oh, we're going to get to dive in. We're going to get to talk about it. And it was actually a script that was all about death. It was all about a man at the end of his life confronting that he didn't do enough. You know, it's a common theme. It's like that Twilight Zone episode where he's like, he couldn't read all the books and there was never enough time. And I met with the agent, and I remember there wasn't one discussion about how the script made her feel or what she valued in it. It was all about, will this sell? I don't know. It was all about sort of the market potential of the script. LA has this weird sort of aura about it that where it's not art should, you know, give feeling. But I know this is sort of irrelevant from death, but it's my own little mini death living out here that it's just like, just it's a isolating experience.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you put all of this time and effort and you know, your legitimate feelings into this script, and it's about this like legitimate emotional topic, you would hope that when somebody reads it, they would elicit some sort of emotion or feeling instead of immediately just going to, you know, dollar signs and, you know, how much money can we all make off of this? And I get it's a business, and they have to look at it from that perspective too. But yeah, I could 100% see that as, I don't know if defeated is the right word, but sure, I could totally understand, you know, being upset by, you know, the excitement that you had and then sort of getting this very, I guess, generic response, right?
Well, yeah, and to bring it back to this idea of death, I think it's like I'm creating this to feel seen, you know, like it sounds childish, but I think a lot of artists have sort of this childlike wonder, but also this childlike ego of like, I want you to see what I'm doing so I feel like I am important in this life before it's too late. And, you know, that's the curse of ego. And it's, you know, ego creates good and bad. We respond to positive stimuli, physical and emotional, through sort of the entity of ego. But ego also creates this awareness that I'm important in the universe and that will all end. So, yeah, it's a double-edged sword, I guess.
It's not great.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough. And again, I don't think either of us are saying anything that crazy, but these are things that I think a lot of people deal with, especially, again, people who are trying to create. I don't know if there is a right or wrong way to sort of deal with these feelings. I guess it's what, at the end of the day, it's whatever helps you sleep at night, right? As long as you can sort of get through the day.
Yeah, my therapist, I told him about how I have such a fear of death, and he made me read this book. I think it was called like Staring at the Sun. I don't know if you've heard of that book. And it was about overcoming sort of death anxiety. And I remember him talking about it in the book of being like, well, like the grand thesis of the book was essentially, we've already experienced death because it's just like what it was before we were born. We had an eternity of that. So it's just a return to that. Not so scary anymore, right? And I'm like, no, that is scary. It's like, that makes me even more scared. And so it's like, it didn't help me sleep at night. So, you know, I'm still waiting for that piece of wisdom that sort of assuages all of my fears, but I don't think that piece is going to come. I think what it is the only thing how you can assuage the fear of death is by creating art and creating family and creating, it sounds corny, but like a positivity in this world. So when it finally comes to the end, you go, okay, well, I guess I had something valuable to contribute.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think that just getting old helps, right? Like, I think for me, at least, this idea, the fear of dying is even more present, and the fear is sort of elevated because I'm still relatively young, right? So like, I'm scared to die like right now. I'm curious if I make it to 80, if I'm going to have the same feeling. You know, you see people who are like pushing 90 years old, and some of them are like, no, I think I'm ready. I think I did it. Like, this is good. I'm sort of ready to go.
It's mind-blowing to me when I hear them say that, because I'm like, that feels like such a mirage. It's like, how I could never imagine myself being able to say, yep, I'm good. Like, put me in the endless void. Like, time is up. Like, but you know, hopefully I'll find that peace one day. But right now it just seems unimaginable.
Yeah, I mean, you read stories sometimes where it's like they're on their deathbed and they're just like smiling and they're like, I had a great life. This is kind of perfect. Like, I'm just sort of slowly fading away. And things I've read and heard, your brain just sort of takes over at that point and pumps whatever chemicals into you that you need to just sort of feel calm and peaceful, and you just sort of, you know, close your eyes and that's it. And I think there's something sort of beautiful about that, but again, terrifying, because then what? Then it's just nothing forever? That's fucking awful.
See, I wish I wasn't such like, and I'm trying to become more like spiritual, I guess, because I wish I wasn't such a staunch pragmatist, where when I hear like people coming to the end of their lives and having these overwhelming sense of calm and peace, the pragmatist in me is like, well, that's just evolutionarily programmed into us, and it's this chemical response that was built in as a necessity to try to not, you know, create panic and fear within our animal bodies. And so, you know, like, I'm trying to get better at sort of deprogramming those, because, you know, maybe there is something to ignorance is bliss. And I'm not saying people who are religious are ignorant, not at all, because I'm starting to see the value of having a belief system and giving yourself up to something like that. But it's hard to deprogram yourself from what you were from your earliest stages, which I come from, you know, a family of practicality and pragmatism. So I don't know.
It's tough. Yeah. I remember I grew up around some pretty religious people, and I would be taken to things sometimes. And I remember just seeing like the look of like this legitimate belief on people's faces. And I was always so jealous that they seemed like they knew that there was this thing after, you know, we die, and that everything was going to be okay. And I would do anything to have that. I would legitimately do anything for that. It seems, and whether they were just really good at pretending or not, I don't know. But even if you could just trick yourself into it, I think I would. If there was a pill I could take that would just make me believe, I would do it.
Yeah, I had a funny experience with religion when I was young, where I went to the church that was just a 5-minute drive away from my house. My mom wanted to, you know, it was endearing. She wanted to be the image of this nice church-going family. And I was, you know, probably 4 years old, 5 years old, first going. And I remember seeing this pastor at the church. He was probably, I don't know, nearly 7 feet tall. He had a white beard. He looked like the perfect classic paragon image of God. And as a kid, you see that and you're like, oh my God, God's at our church. Like, that makes total sense. We're at a place of worship and religion. There's God. And I remember asking my mom after the service, like, so that's God, huh? And she goes, oh no, that's just Tim. And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean that's just him? And I'm like, well, where's God? And she was kind of like, well, I don't know. He's not at our church though. And I was like, okay, something's fishy here. Like, something's not adding up. So that was my first like realization. And I had my dad on the other side, who again was like unwilling to ever be that image of church going family, because he was just kind of like, this is phony, this is dumb. So I was like, I'm gonna go on his side for now, I guess.
You gotta think too that guy knows a little bit of like what he's doing, right? Like, he's like, I know what I look like, and this is maybe he's like a calming figure for people. I do love the idea of your dad sitting next to you and just thinking the whole time about how he's gonna just get his head frozen of this matters.
Yeah, exactly. That was him.
Is your dad still with us? Is he still planning on getting his head frozen?
You know, I haven't asked him in a while. I should see if that's still the plan. I assume it is, you know, not to out him, but I think it's fair to say that I don't think I've seen him have that moment where he goes, okay, my time has come. He's still, you know, he's late 60s, and
yeah,
fair enough. This is where I think I'm going to be too. I think he's still trying to, you know, be willfully ignorant to the fact that his time is ending, which.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, 60s is still young. I mean, as long as you're a healthy 60-year-old, I don't think you're going anywhere anytime soon. But that's definitely, and I think about that too, right? Where there's like these like markers, these like age markers where you're like, man, I mean, I'm on the other side of 30 right now. So like, I'm getting to like midlife. You know, hopefully midlife. The only reason I'm so interested in the head freezing is because there is a place not too far from me. I think maybe it's like 30 minutes from where I'm at, and it's like a legitimate cryogenic lab where there are currently people frozen.
Oh, wow.
And they do. I've been trying to get somebody from there to come on the podcast since I started this thing, and I try and explain the podcast in a way that's not. I'm not trying to like mock them
Yeah.
or talk down to them or anything, but I think they have. I think they're just uncomfortable with like long form discussions on the subject. So
Yeah.
I haven't really had any luck, but I one of these days I'm going to get somebody to come on the podcast and talk about it.
You gotta. And you know, I think I would maybe, I mean, why I'm on the podcast today was because of the short film I made, The Hereafter, which, like, I think previous to making The Hereafter, I would have been more prone to mocking people going to a cryogenic center or doing, you know, one of those people who plant their bodies in a tree pod and grow into a tree. But after making The Hereafter, I think it kind of it made me think a lot about burial practices and traditions, and realizing that, you know, it's not so much that, well, they do think that them cryogenically freezing themselves will grant them eternity, but it's about what it's exactly what religion does, or any thought system of belief does, is it's just making them feel better in the moment. And you know, if you're going to spend 150 grand to do that, to put yourself in a cryogenic center, and it's your money to do what you want. And it probably does make people feel better that, you know, okay, I will have this promise of being brought back. And look, I've done my research into cryogenics. The chance of them being brought back is slim to none, but at least it's making them feel better now. And who am I to judge that? You know, it's whatever you can do to reduce the anxiety and fear of death. Good on you. Like, I don't blame you. No one should mock anyone for what they do to just try to, you know, survive.
Yeah, and I mean it's basically the last decision you get to make, right? Like
Yes.
that's it. This is your last d decision as a conscious human being. You should be allowed to do whatever you want. I love the people who don't want to get cremated just in case they wake up again. Have you ever met that guy who's like,
Yes.
I want to be put in a casket because what if I'm not really dead? What if I wake back up? There's no waking up from the oven. If you're in the you're in the coffin, you still have like that chance, right? Where you never know. But
Well, so that's really interesting. I want to be cremated because I have this fear, and hopefully I can give you this fear now and give all the listeners
yeah,
here.
please.
My greatest fear is that when you die, you are transported to a liminal dark space, and all you have is this vague awareness of consciousness, and you can't move, you can't see anything. Can't even really hear anything. It's just this vague awareness, and you're stuck in it for eternity. That is like haunted me since that thought originally popped up in my mind. And so, like, cremation right now, I'm sure it'll change, gives me the most comfort because I like the idea of just being obliterated and turned into reduced to nothing. Where it's like, I think the idea of being in a coffin builds and adds to this fear of mine of like, being trapped in just a vague awareness and not able to escape it and not able to call out for help or not able to fight or claw your way, you're just stuck. So hopefully I gave you that fear now too.
That is legitimately terrifying. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that at all. It does make me think though that maybe if you are somewhat aware, then it makes me just think, well, then maybe I need to put my body somewhere a little bit more entertaining, right?
Yeah.
So like maybe I'll just like just throw me in the ocean. I could at least like maybe like watch, fish swim by or something. Like
That would be nice. Yeah. That would be
that's
really.
not too bad, right? I think if you are, yeah, that would be, I think, the worst possible outcome for death, right? I can't think of anything worse than that.
Let's hope it doesn't come to that. But like, for
I
some
think,
reason, I've convinced myself it might happen.
I mean, I read a story not too long ago where they were discussing consciousness after your heart stops beating, and it seems to be a lot longer than we originally thought. I'm trying to, I actually was sending this to somebody. Dying people may be conscious up to an hour after flatlining.
Oh my God. See, that sounds terrifying.
So you might not be too far off, pal. I don't know. That's what we're learning right now. Who knows what we'll discover 100, 200 years from now. So yeah, I think you definitely unlocked a new fear. That's fun. Let's get into the hereafter a little bit, because I've watched it multiple times now. I really enjoyed it. If you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. What was the YouTube channel?
It's premiered on this channel called Omletto.
Okay.
So if you YouTube the hereafter Omletto or the hereafter my name, it'll pop up.
Okay. And the idea of this movie is these selfie caskets, which I'm sure anytime you tell someone or you talk about this, the first thing they probably say to you is, well, that's probably not that far off, right? Like, I mean, is that something that's just constantly mentioned to you, that that this is probably going to become a thing at some point?
Constantly, which I'm proud of that I like to think of ideas that could maybe be plausible.
Sure. Yeah. It definitely doesn't seem that far off of a thing. The first thing that I have to ask you about is the brother and sister CEOs, right? So you couldn't have nailed that type of person better. I mean, the fact that you made them brother and sister is so perfect to me, because of course they're brother and sister. Like, why wouldn't they be? It makes me think of, like, there's like these local TV ads that play sometimes where it's like the husband and wife law team. And the brother and sister, construction, whatever it is. And they're always creepy, and they always have like that dead eye look. And I'm just curious if there was like any sort of specific inspiration for the brother and sister team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what's funny is it was originally a father-daughter duo. I
Okay.
think that snake oil salesman is sort of a family business. That's the way I always picture it,
Yeah.
is where like these snake oil figures always indoctrinate their family and make it this family business. So it was originally a father and daughter, and then we started, our casting director was getting us tapes. And almost all of the tapes were for men who were 50s, 60s, maybe even some early 70s. And they were great, but there was something so chilling about the actor Corey Landis, who I ended up casting. Something so chilling about his tape that I was like, I have to rewrite this character because he was a bit younger. He was like early 40s. And then we ended up casting Paige Kato as the sister. And just by necessity of him being such a creep, which I hope people go check out, I was like, I have to make this change just so I can cast him. Yeah, there's something, I hope you get vague. There should be vague incestuous implications amongst them, because I think snake oil salesmen are smarmy and dirty, and just they feel like they are the scum of the earth, really.
There is something a bit odd about just a siblings being almost too close.
Yes.
Right? I don't know. I wanted to ask you, obviously, without just being like too cliche of a question, I am sort of curious, where the idea came from. Not to just be like, well, how did you come up with, but I am a bit curious as to, obviously death is a part of your life. You're thinking about it a lot from a young age, but what was there like a specific motivation? I know we talked also about this wanting to evoke feeling and draw emotion, but why this topic? Why write this movie?
Yeah, absolutely. It was based off of actually a short story I wrote quite a bit ago in college, and it was about this product called the selfie casket. And I think when I wrote this story, it was when Instagram and Snapchat, but really Instagram was starting to feel like it was not just like this ancillary app on the sidelines. It was starting to feel like it was integrating itself into culture, commerce, personal life in such an inextricable way. And it just felt like social media platforms and everything were just lodging itself in almost like an appendage of us now, which like that's I remember reading a study in college where it was a sleep study. They had people wake up in the middle of the night and it was something about they had lost their phones. And it was showing that like when you wake up and you like reach for your phone, your body's registering your phone as a part of like an appendage of itself.
Yeah.
And so it's like these things are becoming so tied to us. Nothing is sacred anymore, is what I was thinking about when I wrote the story. It's like everything is just so publicized and posted. And so it just came from this frustration that we can't avoid sort of these corporations coming after us. They are attacking us from every corner, every side. And so it's just like death to me was one of the most like sacred parts of human life. It's like, oh, that's too taboo. Let's not touch on it. But the selfie casket came out of this idea of like, maybe nothing's too sacred. Maybe they'll come, even they'll find a way to profit off of death itself. And so, yeah, I guess that's where it came out of.
There's a part in the movie where they're sort of making this argument between the voicemails from her mom and the casket, right? And I thought that was really interesting because I was really, immediately you're like, this is creepy, this is terrifying. How could you ever want to have a selfie casket? And I was finding myself sort of agreeing with both sides when there is that sort of comparison, but between, it's having these saved voicemails and just wanting to. Now, obviously, there was like some other intentions as well behind this selfie casket, but I did think that was interesting where that we do have these things when people pass away. A lot of people will continue to call. No one's deleting contacts from your phone. I mean, I have, unfortunately, multiple dead contacts in my phone. Like, I'm not deleting those. I'll never. Why it would it seems insane to me to delete that. I'm not calling and listening to their voicemail or anything, but I don't think there's any shame in doing that either. So I thought that was really interesting, in the sense that, like, yeah, we all have our way of sort of staying connected, whether it's through a voicemail or some sort of selfie casket.
I'm glad you bring that up. Like I wanted the idea of the selfie casket to be absurd, but I wanted to try my best to try to ground it in emotional realism. And so when the dad says, like, I just want to hold on to any trace of you, that's something you can't really refute or deny. It's like
Yeah.
a dad, of course he would want to hang on to whatever he could of his daughter. And I know I hyperbolize it into this absurd territory, but maybe it isn't so absurd because I used to I was dating this girl in college and she ended up sadly taking her life. And I still from time to time I'm sort of like a hoarder of digital information. And so like I saved old like I ended up getting this program where you could like make PDFs of your old texts because like I just want to hold on to all these little traces. And from time to time, I'll still go read back our like text chain, which is really sad and heartbreaking. But it's like, what's so different than that and a picture of somebody? And what's so different from a picture of someone alive to someone dead? It's like, where can you draw the line and say, nope, you can't, that's weird. You can't do that anymore. So yeah, I wanted to ground it all in this idea of like needing to keep little reminders of people around.
I'm always so curious about what that line is, because I mean, Aside from digging up a corpse, I don't know if there is a line for me, at least. It, whatever makes you feel better, right? I mean,
well, I mean, like, think about, like, it's become so commonplace, but think about the idea of an open casket ceremony. It's really when you remove yourself from it being a part of sort of everyday culture, it's a really bizarre thing we do. You go and we put makeup on these corpses and we sort of beauty, like, try to beautify them. And we go and look at this corpse, and that's supposed to bring us solace. And this is something that is so common. And it's like, wait, that's so weird that we do that. But it's, I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's just like, it's something you gotta, like, I try to always, like, bring an alien perspective to. And it's like, if I were to come with this with fresh eyes, like, the fact that we view dead bodies and that brings us peace is just strange.
There's a Seinfeld joke where he goes, the proof that we don't understand death at all is the fact that we give them a pillow.
Yeah.
And it's true. The idea of giving, as simple as that is, it really
that
sort
is
of,
so funny. That is great. Wow.
It's, right? It's yeah. I mean, it's the perfect Seinfeld joke about death, really. But I agree. I think there are a ton of quote unquote bizarre things that people do, but again, grief is just so tricky, man. It's just, it is so difficult, and I don't think we have any idea of how it truly affects us. I did an episode with a neuroscientist, and she basically studies people's brains while they're grieving. She would have these people come in and hook them up to these machines and legitimately watch their brain as she had them tell her stories and describe these people and tell them what happened and share memories. And it's, she wrote a book. It's called The Grieving Brain. It's an incredible book. I definitely recommend anybody interested or going through grief to read it. And the one thing that I sort of got out of, you know, what she has learned, she compared it to losing a limb. When you, people describe losing an arm, they, after they lose the arm, you know, months down the road when they're sort of healed and back to life, they still say they could feel the arm, like, right, it's still there. That's your brain solving a problem. That's right. Your brain going, okay, you lost your arm, but I'm still going to make you feel like it's there. Problem solved. Now, losing a loved one is a major problem that the brain can't solve. So your brain is constantly trying to fix this problem. It's trying to make you feel like that person's there, but they're not. And, like, that's sort of what grief is. And there's really no way to fix that. So if you want to put your kid in a selfie casket, because that might help you deal with the loss of your 21-year-old or whatever, I don't think it's that crazy.
No, and that, if there's any thesis statement of my film, and, like, I touched on this before, but it's, no one should be shamed for how they grieve, because that is something that, like, it just bonds us, is that we all have to go through this life where we end up slowly losing everyone we love, and, like, the only thing you can do to be a truly empathetic human is to try and just accept what people do in the face of that just insurmountable trauma. So, yeah, if there's anything I can tell people from watching the film, it's just, like, let people grieve, let them do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to happen no matter what. Everyone is going to grieve at some point. I feel like I was very lucky in the sense that I didn't really have to truly grieve until I was much older. And, you know, you lose great grandparents and grandparents and stuff when you're young. And if you're lucky, it's not something that's a relative surprise, and you're sort of prepared for it. You know, there are people that are middle-aged that still really haven't lost anyone close to them and don't truly get it. And I think there is sort of figuring out what works for you. There's one line in the film where she says, "I want to be with mom as nothing." And I sort of loved that. I felt like that was, again, like a very simple way. It's like a very simple but like profound way of just sort of explaining death, right? Or like describing death. It's like, I just want to be nothing. I don't think there's anything wrong with being nothing.
And I think that is a couple things. It's one, it's sort of her rebuttal to these CEOs saying, like, you should hold on to and reclaim your ego even after death. Yeah. Like, I think you should be this image of inspiration. And it's me, that line from Olive is me trying to aspire to that level of like inner peace, of like, I want to get to a place where I could be happy being nothing. Because right now, as an artist and someone, I feel like I'm trying to always prove myself to be something to everyone. So there is something so beautiful of just giving up. I'm not saying that in a way where people should give up on life, but there's something that to me brings me peace. At the end, I could just be happy with nothing. Yeah, it's sort of a line I wrote as like, I write these lines a lot of times where it's like, I know I'm not at that place yet, but I hope to be I hope to sort of walk in line with these characters I'm writing and aspire to be better through them.
At the end of the day, I think why I wrote that line down in my notes is because, yeah, I want to sort of be nothing. I want to just, or I just want to like sort of be. I want to just exist and not have a million different expectations for myself all the time.
The expectations and everything and our current day and age is just, it feels very noisy. It feels like there is so much noise from media and just this constant cacophony. I feel like we're forgetting, and maybe it's just because I'm in LA and I'm sure like if I were to go back and live a peaceful life in Hawaii, I wouldn't feel this way. But like, there is just so much noise that it's just like, I seek quiet. I seek silence, which is, you know, synonymous with nothing. So yeah.
The hereafter is so great. I'm so glad you were able to make this film and that people could go watch it. If you haven't seen it, go check it out right now. And then I also have seen you, and you mentioned briefly that you're starting a new project. I'd love to hear what that is and if people could go support, where they could go support the new project.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the new one is going to be called All We Can Do. And in a way, I guess it's about death again. Not in the forefront, but it's about a government program that sends female agents to the houses of lonely and depressed males, particularly ones who have been making alarming and violent comments online. And they are sent to the homes of these males to give them a sexual release. And the government hopes that this will curb mass shootings in America. And I know that sounds like a thorny, problematic premise, and that is sort of the point. It's supposed to speak on sort of our current administration and the feudal nature of bureaucracy and feeling like we're helpless and powerless in it, and sort of how they tend to view female body as disposable, and with the abolition of Roe v. Wade. And it's supposed to make you feel like, for the frustration that a lot of us feel of we are powerless in the system. I know it's a sad sounding one, but I promise there'll be some humor in it. And it's you through Seed and Spark, or you can look at my Instagram, Ryan Newfer, and you can find out information on it.
You know, loneliness is a real problem these days.
Please check out my work, and I just want to say thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Ryan. This has been really great, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Yeah, have a good one, Rob.